to home, we sit down with Trauma Comics creator Simon Sanchez on his works Nazi Werewolves from Outer Space, King Tut Truck Driver, as well as Kung Fu Satanist. This will contain detailed plot spoilers and language. Listener discretion is advised. Folks, Hunter Galcast here. Just wanted to record another quick disclaimer before we begin tonight's episode. One of the issues that we're going to be discussing will be Nazi Werewolves from Outer Space. Now, I did read this comic book before sitting down with its creator, Simon Sanchez. I'm just going to make a few things really clear. There's no racial insensitivity regarding Nazi Werewolves from Outer Space. Simon has made it very clear on the science fiction aspects and some quote-unquote historical aspects in regarding Nazi agenda. It does deal with Adolf Hitler and experimentation, so I'm just going to make it very clear. If you know somebody who survived during the Holocaust, or you knew people that did not make it, this podcast may not be for you. If it's going to hit a nerve, it's understandable, so tonight's podcast may not be for everyone. Thank you very much. Once upon a time, there were these things called midnight movies. As luck and coincidence have it, I have seen a few of them this past weekend. I saw the Corman version of Fantastic Four. I saw the 2015 version of Fantastic Four. I'm going through some trauma. And what better way with said trauma than talk about Trauma Comics? Simon Sanchez, thank you so much for joining us. And we have gotten Nazi Werewolves from Outer Space. That's a mouthful right there. King Tut, Truck Driving Pharaoh, and Kung Fu Satanist.
Howdy from Texas.
Yes. Well, that would explain a lot then. Yes, that's starting. It's all starting to come together now. I have to ask you with these titles. Where did you come up with these?
I'm a big fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000. And I loved all those crazy titles. I loved Ed Wood's Plan 9 from Outer Space. I loved the Grindhouse movies. So that's the origin of those crazy titles.
I would say so. How long did it take you to come up with, putting pen to paper and just saying, okay, we're going to have King Tut become a truck driver?
For me to write each of those stories, it probably takes me about maybe an hour to write them. For King Tut, first of all, it was Nazi Werewolves from Outer Space, then Kung Fu Satanist, and I was trying to think of a third title. Anything to do with vampires, because vampires are, as far as a major title, I really wanted to do something really different, so I thought, well, nobody's ever done anything with King Tut as far as making him an outlandish character. So I thought, well, it would be cool if he was a truck driver. And to go a step further, have him fight subterranean transgender vampires. So, and also King Tut was my tribute to the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I guess we're not going to count Batman 66 then.
all the books have that campy vein to it, I'm a big fan of the 66 series. I love that was a big part of my childhood. In fact, everybody always says, who's the ultimate Batman? Well, it's whoever you were introduced to, and for me it was Adam West.
One thing I have to ask, though, is that the King Tut, this issue came out 2 years ago, in 2013.
Uh-huh.
Again, I'm a newbie to your comics, so out of curiosity, are there more issues of King Tut, or is this the only one right
now? Issue two is going to be King Tut versus the Radioactive Trailer Trash.
Good.
So, it's always some kind of the subterranean transgender vampires, radioactive trailer trash, It could have been Bigfoot midget, Bigfoot riders, something like that. You know, it's always something crazy.
Now, I have to ask you, because you have a great team here with the coloring and the art. You got Gene. I want to make sure I got the name right. Octavio, is that the name?
That's one of the guys, but mainly it's Dean Juliet. That person you named, he did the coloring for part of King Tut. But for the most part, Dean Juliet, pencils, inks, colors, and letters, all the books.
I love this cover, though. It's King Tut shirtless, but he's wearing jeans and trucker boots, and he's just holding the head of a vampire, and our eyes are kind of like rolling. And with that classic, it does feel something also TC Trauma Comics. It also reminds me a little bit of EC Entertainment Comics.
I love EC. In my opinion, those are the best comics ever produced.
They also have the best covers. With holding people's heads by the hair,
that's a big influence on the comics. That's William Gaines, and in my opinion, they were the best comics ever produced. You know, hands down, beating Marvel, DC, anybody.
Yeah, we are going to get to this one day, because we've all seen that 2003 History Channel, the discussion of comics, and of course, that book that has pissed me off since day one, that it's so hard to find unless you want to get like a used copy of it, Seduction of the Innocent.
Oh yeah, Robert.
That book, I've gotten bits and pieces of that book, and it really, I mean, thank God with William Gaines, he ended up working on Mad Magazine. I have to give him that. But him that book destroying those EC comics has been like, but we are going to get there one day. But I'm really glad though that the reason why I trail off is that this cover kind of reminds me of it. You know, it's a love letter to William Gaines of what he did back in the 50s.
Yeah, that was a big game changer, the Seduction of the Innocent. And there's a lot of comics that are in the price guide that receive more value because they were mentioned in Seduction of the Innocent. And a lot of them were EC, like the Harvey horror books, stuff like that, the Eerie publications. A lot of those are mentioned in Seduction of the Innocent, and they receive more value now. Ironically, because of that, you know, because of decapitation or bondage scenes. I don't know if you saw the issue cover to Nazi Werewolves from Outer Space.
Oh yeah, we'll get there.
It's number two, but it has a bondage headlight cover, and that was my tribute. Those covers that were banned are worthy of Robert Worth of Wortham's Seduction of the Innocent.
I'm actually looking at the covers as we're actually really digging the painted style of them, and I mean it gives it that classic feel, and that's one of the things I dug about the series. I mean, for like King Tut and you know the rest of them, I mean the artwork was great on the covers and everything like that. It makes you want to pick it up and read it and find out what's going on.
You know, I was also a big fan of the Gold Key books, and there was a lot of them that like Magnus Robot Hunter. They always had a painted cover, you know. So I always dug that. Like there was always a painted cover on those things. So I thought it would be cool to always include a painted cover. That's Don Marquez. He's from California. Dean Juliet is the artist. Is from Brazil. He and I have never spoken. We just communicate by email because he doesn't speak English well. But and same thing with Don Marquez. I've never spoken to the guy. So I'm from Texas. Don Marquez is from California. Dean Juliet is from Brazil. So, you know, the book's got a real international flavor to it.
I can tell this would be something international because that these books are available in comic book shops.
Yeah, I think there's about 11 shops in the United States where my books are on sale at. And also, you can go to Indie Planet and pick them up there. You can even get them as a digital download for 99 cents.
Well, my question is that we're in the 21st century, no comics code to this day. How have you ever got any backlash about if you sell them in a comic book store, where they're going to go? Like how you pitch?
Sure. Yeah, I'm just an independent guy, and I literally call stores and ask them, hey, do you sell independent books? And if they say yes, I'll say, well, will you sell mine? And the next pitch is the title. And Nazi Werewolves from Outer Space is, it's kind of a hard sell. But once they get the books, they sell there. And people like them. But, you know, when you get hit with that title off the bat, you know, they're kind of scared, you know. And also with Kung Fu Satanist.
Yeah, the titles alone I could understand. I mean, I'm near about 6 comic book stores right now, which is heaven. So I have seen where the independent comics are allowed to be placed, where they'll have to be kept away from kids, who's going to see them, where it's going to go. Sometimes they get lost in the shuffle. I got to praise you. Like, if you go to a comic book store and say, okay, I'm going to give you titles with King Tut truck driving Pharaoh, you also present Nazi werewolves from outer space. And we're going to get there when we get there. But Kung Fu Satanists, you can go around and around and around. There's got to be somebody from the PTA that kind of like goes around and says, no, no.
Well, you know, in the 70s, there was a title called Son of Satan. That's been done. Kung Fu Satanist was my tribute. The Exorcist, Kung Fu movies. I'm a child of the 70s, so there was a lot of Kung Fu movies. Once The Exorcist came out, there were a lot of devil movies. And if you notice on the cover of Kung Fu Satanist, his head's spinning around. So that's my little nod to the Exorcist and the Kung Fu movies of the 70s.
Okay, I actually like that scene. His head spins around in the book. He looks at the guy behind him and was giggling. So.
Yeah. But that's my tribute to the Exorcist.
Well, I mean, that was one of the first things looking at these that struck me, is it really took me back to pick up the Tales from the Crypt or the Creepshow comics, and they always have the weirdest titles. Like you had mentioned, I think you mentioned Twilight Zone. And how they would always have those. And it always reminded me of, like, those B-movies that you were like, that's going to be terrible. But then you watched it, and it had a great story that went with it. And you were like, okay, so this is a guilty pleasure. I don't care what Rotten Tomatoes says. This is mine. I like that about these, because they're really, they're kind of like polished stones. Because once you see them, you're like, no, there's no way that's going to be a good book. There's no way. And then you read it, and it's great. It's amazing. The flow is there. The artwork is wonderful. I love Dean Juliet's work. I've gotten to actually play with a few of his when he was doing sketch covers for pinups and things like that back before all of this happened. So it's good work. I mean, it's just amazing. And for you to have that language barrier and still be able to convey what you're wanting in a scene, and him to just be like, boom, I got you.
Yeah, you know, I send him the script. He'll send me back these thumbnails, and rarely do I change anything. He's spot on with recreating what I've written. And same thing with Don Marquez. I design the covers. I'll send Don an idea, and he's pretty much spot on with what I want. And it's rare for me to say, okay, this ain't working, and I want to change it. Rarely do I ever do that. Both Don, Dean are great with the recreating what I've, the sick thoughts in my head.
No, that's truly a gift to have when you're a creator, to not have to really spell everything out for them to get that and to click with you, especially with the language barrier. So that's really cool to see, especially when you played it as beautifully as it is.
Yeah, like I said, Dean Juliet is a tour de force, because he pencils it, he inks it, he colors it, and he letters it. And I don't know if there are any artists out there that can do all of that, because
but I don't think pretty is what he does.
Yeah, because most of those fields, you know, people just do one section, like I'm just a colorist, or I'm just an inker, or I'm just I just do pencils, or I just do lettering. You know, this guy does, Dean Juliet does it all. Yeah, he's really amazing.
I do love how he draws the women, especially Tut's wife. I do just want to jump right into the story real quick. I mean, first of all, it does start off as a mummy movie, because let's be honest and fair with ancient Egyptians, with mummification. We all know the mythology when it comes to mummies and mummification. So I appreciate what we've done with movies concerning the original mummy, and what we've done as a culture with the 1990 version of the mummy. I haven't seen the Horror Hammer Films versions of the mummy, but I do appreciate as a culture that the mummy, I guess, would be an original zombie movie, because zombies are people that are dead. They do come back from the dead, but they're under a spell. The zombies that are in Walking Dead or Night of the Living Dead, those are really more ghouls than zombies.
Right.
So this is more of a return from the living dead zombie movie that's not from a chemical or radiation from a satellite. And I love the fact that the wife, she's not out for blood, she's not out for... We don't know what she is. She just kind of comes out of the sarcophagus, and she's stumbling around. Yeah, she is half naked, but if I... Well, no, because I understand this too. The way that the bandages, it does look like a bikini, but as I understand with the mythology of mummification, you did wrap the body in bandages because this way it would preserve the body in both life and death. That's my understanding. I mean, that's mummification 101. We can go on and on and on, but, you know, that's another podcast for another time. I do appreciate how she has an innocent story. The only thing that I kind of complained about with this is that, besides the fact she doesn't speak, she does become vampire food very quickly. And I've always had a problem with vampirism. Vampires, I understand they drink blood, I know all the mythology, but pardon the pun, it sucks being a vampire. You're allergic to sunlight, you're allergic to garlic. I don't know the pros about being a vampire.
Well, I wanted to bring her in for the shock ending. You know, that's what planned it out. It's okay, she's going to disappear for a little bit, but I wanted to come back in the ending in a big way. That's why she kind of disappeared there for a little bit. And, you know, plus she had that whole battle with King Tut in the subterranean transgender vampire. So, you know, while he's battling the vampires, she's transforming, you know. So, you know, she had to go through that whole process while he was duking it out with the vampires.
King Tut, of course, he has the typical King Tut staff where he can use it as a magic wand. Egyptology, with their understanding of gods and magic. I mean, we can go on and on again, of course, about with the ancient pharaohs. I do like how this King Tut is taken seriously, though. It almost feels like something out of Batman 66.
Like I said, I love that the Batman 66 series, and all of the books have a grindhouse, campy feel to them. So, you know, for you to say that, then, yeah, you're right on with where the books are headed. They're not to be taken too seriously.
It also feels very Terminator, where he goes, you know, I need clothes, and he puts on the jeans and the boots.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm almost waiting for him to say, I need your shirt, I need your jeans, I need your shoes now. And I'm almost waiting for somebody to say, you didn't say...
Your boots and your motorcycle now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm almost waiting for that guy to just say, you didn't say please, and try to extinguish the cigar on his chest.
Yeah, that was a fun book to put together. You know, out of all the books, that's probably my favorite. And Dean Julian has said it also, like, that was his favorite book to do. So I need to, right now, he and I are working on issue 2 of Kung Fu Sadness. So after we finish that, we'll get back to King Tut.
And then, of course, we have the subterranean transgender vampires.
Yeah.
Same to you, pal. Exposition seems to be a lot in comics, and on one hand, I didn't know if we needed another origin story, but this one is a true mouthful, and it works. I mean, this was like, as soon as I heard we're not just vampires, we're subterranean transgender vampires,
yeah.
I'm like, man, you have really changed the game with the vampires now. How they have a right to be pissed off, because they want a sex change operation, but they're given the blood of a vampire, and that's how they become vampires, because they were given the wrong blood transfusion?
Well, you know, that was messing around with titles. You know, King Tut, Truck Driving Pharaoh, Subterranean Transgender Vampires. It's just cool to do a mashup like that. You know, there's so many vampire books out there already, and you know, that whole genre's been done. I wanted to do a different spin on it, and I don't think anybody's ever put a transgender into a comic.
I just want to jump to the end, where after King Tut has destroyed the vampires, he's now Renegade. That's the one I'm thinking about. That's the one where he had the Native American motorcycle friend, that there was, you know, a cop was framed for murder. He didn't commit. He's got a Native American friend in the 70s, and they're riding motorcycles. Renegade
was a TV show.
Right, right. But this kind of reminds me a little bit of Renegade. King Tut now has, I guess, a sidekick.
Yeah, and that was my plan, was they're going to travel the United States and get into, encounters in every city they're in, and, you know, fight, freaky people and have adventures.
Yeah, I do love that the next to last panel where, you know, the sidekick is saying, like, I'm sorry about your wife, and King Tut is just like, well, I'll miss her, and he's just, he has the hand up and everything, and, you know... But I'm in a new world now, and he's just got the smile on his look. Like, he was really upset that his wife became vampire fodder, and now all of a sudden he's like, well, them's the breaks, kid. It feels like a unused pilot for some reason. I have to ask you, if you ever pitched this to a network, or even on Netflix, or taking new material, would anybody even pick this up?
You know what, the only title that I was approached about doing a movie was Coming From Satanist. I had a low-budget filmmaker approached me and asked me to a film version of Kung Fu Satanist. And the other offer I got, writer, he wanted to take over Kung Fu Satanist and write the stories. So it's, out of those three titles, the only one that, you know, people approached me for, as far as, like, going the next level with it, was Kung Fu Satanist.
And then, of course, we have this ending where it's like, he misses his wife, but then I guess another transgender guy comes out from... behind, they're in the truck now.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'll miss my wife, but, you know, maybe somebody else can take care of my manly needs. Wife has been bitten, of course, as we said, by the transgender vampire. She becomes a transgender vampire. This ending feels like something out of a 70s TV show where you're about, like, ready to freeze and have the credits come up. Like, Coach, I gotta ask you again, though. Since she's, I guess, undead, like, unalive, is that... what happens now? Are they going to be together, like, with issue two? Like, what is their story going to be after this now?
I thought about just dropping her off at a truck stop, and they leave, and, you know, as they're driving off, you see the truck stop, the whole bar area, the blood splattered all over the windows, and she starts, you know, attacking everybody. So that was my plan, was just to dump her off at the next truck stop. You know, he don't want anything to do with her, because, you know, it's a man now. You're a man, baby.
Perfect.
You like that, Kendra?
That was perfect. That would be intriguing. Like, I would literally, I would pay bunches of money to see that continue. Because think about how intriguing that has to be for a writer. Like, not only have you turned the main female character into a wife, into a male, but now you have to find a way to continue that story, and if there is love there, to continue that love without making it, you know.
Well, in real life, King Tut was married to his sister, so it's his sister.
That would,
not his brother.
Yeah, that's his brother, you know.
This is what I want to see. I want to see King Tut and the Kung Fu Satanist team up for, like, an issue.
Yeah, I thought about doing, like, you remember when, Tales of Suspense?
Yes.
60s, Captain America and Iron Man, you know, and I love those split-level covers where you have, you know, Iron Man doing something and Captain America. Another one was Incredible Hulk and Submariner. You know, I love those titles where you had two heroes, and then they would eventually meet.
Final thing I'm going to say, though, I guess, because I'm reading the digital copy, we just have a panel or one-shot where Tut and the sidekick are just, like, working on a truck. It almost feels, again, like the end credits of a TV show. Like, I'm just waiting for all the credits. You know, like, when they just freeze frame.
Yeah.
And then we see the other one where they're in a bar, and he's just punching out a hooker. Are these more transgender vampires?
Yeah. Yeah, that's just like an alternate cover that I was telling Dean to draw them. If you look in the TV screen, it shows a UFO abducting a cow.
So would that be leading up to Nazi werewolves? Or?
Yeah, kind of. It was like a little tip of the hat to Nazi werewolves.
Kung Fu Satanist, you mentioned with The Exorcist. What else can we expect from Kung Fu Satanist?
He's a detective. It kind of has a Dexter feel to it, because he goes after bad guys, and he kills criminals, but to sacrifice their souls. But they're always bad guys. He never goes after anybody good. So it has a Dexter feel to it. I named him Arthur Brown. Arthur Brown was a 1960s singer. He had a hit named Fire. I am the God of Hellfire. You know, so that was who I named Arthur, Ken Fusatinus, I named him Arthur Brown. For the next issue, it has to do with a drug cartel in Mexico, they're sacrificing human beings to protect their drug cartel. And that's based on a true story that was here in Texas, where this drug cartel from Mexico was abducting college students and dismembering their bodies and sacrificing them to protect the drug cartel. So that's the bane of Kung Fu Satanists. He's always involved in a supernatural story.
That almost brings an urban legend feel to it. That's epic. That's really cool. That's right in my vein.
Yeah, that's based on a true story. It was they were using Santeria to protect their drug trade, and they were abducting these college kids. So that's what I got planned for issue two of Kung Fu Satanists. And he'll always be involved in a supernatural event. Kind of like the X-Files. You know, remember that X-Files are always involved in something.
I guess you had to collect those Mars Attacks cards and the Dinosaur Attacks cards. I know they're out in the 60s. They came back again in the 80s.
I have a collection of the reprints, but yeah, and in Nazi Werewolves, there's a scene where they shoot the dog, and that was actually a card, you know, where they said shooting the dog. So yeah, I love that. I love that Mars Attacks. The card set.
When you come up with the design in Kung Fu Satanists with the character, I want to make sure I pronounce this correctly, Iska? Iska?
Oh, yeah, Iska. Iska, I just threw letters together, and then someone pointed out to me that stood for International Sporting Karate Association. And I had no idea that it had that.
Coincidence.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I just thought it was something to throw together, yeah, and it has no meaning to it. You know, I wanted his demon master to have a weird name. You know.
That's awesome. That means that you have like these conspiracy theorists that can come off of your comic books. Because I'm like, this stands for this.
Well, In The Exorcist, the demon that was controlling the little girl, his name was Pazuzu. So that was kind of had that flavor to it.
The design for Iska, it almost feels like Hellraiser with, you know, the white head and all the cracks coming down the skull.
Yeah.
Is it Pinhead or is it?
No. It's in The Exorcist.
Oh, it's Pazuzu.
Yeah, there was a moment in the movie where the father is having the priest is having a nightmare, and his face flashes on for like a second. That's who Iska is.
Yeah, I haven't seen Exorcist in about 15 years, so.
You know, I saw the Exorcist when it came out in the theaters in 1973, and it was shocking. And people were running out of the theater, people were vomiting. It was really, nobody had ever, you know, up until that point, horror movies were like, vampires, Frankenstein, Wolfman, stuff that, you know, didn't exist. But that was something that was very believable. Like, this could really happen.
Well, not only that, but then you got from the actors themselves when they were doing the interviews from the movie, you got the scary stories about what had happened while they were even filming.
Yeah, one of the actors died.
And things like that. I mean, that in itself added to the lore of The Exorcist and made it such a great cult classic that it is.
Yeah, in my opinion, it's the greatest horror movie ever made.
And this apparently is a tribute to Exorcist in a roundabout way. I do have to give you credit where credit is due, because when it comes to Satanists in comics and in movies, they were considered to be hokey and jokey back then, that they were just people that were just sacrificing chickens or whatever and just chanting. You would have like these half-naked women and men just like, you know, having the skulls painted on their faces, and there was just voodoo. Here, it's taken a lot more seriously. I understand you must have done more research in the history of voodoo.
You know what? When I write these stories, I think, what would look cool? What would grab the reader's attention? Yeah. If you notice, the dialogue's really brief. I want it to flow with a lot of action, and I want it to keep going. I don't want it to be like Crisis on Infinite Earths, where you have like word balloons that take up the whole panel, and you gotta, you know. I just want them to be fun, horror, and adventure. You know, rolling really quick.
We have, I guess Iska's enemy, this voodoo priestess, or is it a priest?
Yeah.
Is it a priestess? I couldn't tell. The
dreadlocks. Yeah, no, it's a female.
Yeah, it's just that the dreadlocks were kind of covering the body, so it was kind
uh-huh.
of hard to tell. But I do love the battle between these two, where you know you have the humans, and then above them you have the demons battling as well, which
yeah.
is a great shot. The way that I guess this priestess dies is that Iska, or at least human form, rips the heart out, and the priestess is holding up her own heart as it's kind of been ripped out in her universe. I guess whatever happens to the human happens to the demon.
Yeah, I wanted them to die too.
So
you know,
this,
both of them, you know, it was a simultaneous death.
So this is kind of a different way on the voodoo doll mythology, or just it's just that if the demon dies, the human dies, or.
I'm just taking, yeah, like I said, I'm not an expert on demonology or voodoo or any of that. I just thought it would be a cool way that for if he died, then his master would die also. So yeah, that was just my like. It would be cool to see that.
It's a great death. I mean, don't get me wrong.
I thought it worked out really well. I mean, you're sitting there saying that you didn't do any research over it, but the thing is I was loving the hell out of it. I was like, all right. I was like, I give you kudos just for, you know, being adventurous and having fun with it. So.
Yeah, and I wanted a serial killer in there too. So, you know, I'm always fascinated by serial killers. So, I thought that would be cool to incorporate that into the comic.
It also, for some reason, feels very Temple of Doom with the heart getting ripped out. But
yeah,
we've all been there. We'll be back right after this.
Hello, geeks. Want a podcast that covers a vast array of topics with no rhyme or reason? Then check out Altered Geek Unlimited, where the topics fly more or less off the cuff. We cover media news, TV, our favorite geek products, and of course, your feedback. So get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks every Friday on the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to Crazy Eddie's Podcast Sales Group. Need a podcast? We've got so many, we're giving them away. That's right, folks, we're giving them away for free with zero down, zero do it signing, and you can earn 0% for life. When you come on board, Pitchbound Network will give you a podcast. Need that pesky RSS feed for compatible with iTunes and Stitcher radio problems? Not a problem. Need a place to store your podcast for the listeners to stream? No problem. Need an email address? No problem. But wait, there's more. Bad credit, no problem. The TBN is giving everything away for free. Everything must go. Contact the TBN now to get your own podcast for free. Some restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See tangentboundnetwork.com for details. Side effects may include nausea, upset stomach, and in some rare cases, death from excessive laughter. The podcast you're listening to is probably not held responsible for the content of this message.
Remote Control is the new TV podcast from the Geekcast Radio Network. We'll be covering TV shows and topics from the year 2000 to whenever now is. We'll have special themed episodes entitled Pilot and Season Premieres, as well as finishing finales. We'll also have Season Pass episodes, where we take a look at an entire season of a TV show. Remote Control can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and www.geekcastradio.com. So tune in, because we are all remote controlled.
Nazi Werewolves from Outer Space. I love this cover. I know from your Facebook page you are a fan of Robot Monster.
Here's how that whole thing started. I was at work and we were kicking around titles, and I just threw out Nazi Werewolves from Outer Space. Like, hey, wouldn't that be cool to see a comic like that? Everybody loved it. And I saw on eBay that Don Marquez had an eBay commission, and he'll do whatever you ask him to do. So I had no idea of writing a story. I'm not a professional writer by no means, and I've never written a comic. So I just commissioned him to do this piece of Hitler and the gorilla body and the robot arm and the bubble head and the Nazi werewolves. And he finished that piece, and I was so knocked out by it that I thought, wow, there should be a story behind this. So I sat down and I wrote the story, and connected with Dean Juliet. Also, it was an eBay commission. You know, I'll do a comic for you for X amount of dollars, and from that's how the ball got rolling. And when the issue came out, it's done well. Out of all three of those titles, Nazi Werewolves sells the best.
I can tell. With a title like Nazi Werewolves from Outer Space, you're going to get your money's worth. I do love that it's Hitler. The cover is Hitler. He comes out of the spaceship that has the SWAT stickers on the spaceship. He's got the werewolf, even though it feels like the robot monster gorilla body. This feels very Mars Attacks, and we have werewolves that are wearing the SWAT stickers and are just chowing down on people. This also seems to be your earliest, because this one came out in 2011.
Yeah, I'm up to issue 4 right now, so...
Right, this seems to be the more ongoing, I can tell. I have to ask you, because there have been, since September 11th, hot topics with the enemy coming out of nowhere and just attacking any country without warning. The comic also pulls no punches, where we just have a person walking around with a sandwich board saying the end is near, and then the spaceship immediately comes in and starts annihilating the town. I have to ask you, were there any hot topics or any issues? I mean, first of all, you have Nazis attacking.
The only criticism I ever received, and it was someone from Germany who requested the book, and I sent him a copy, and he wanted to do an interview with me, and so I agreed. And the first thing he right out of the bat was, you know, why Nazis? Why us? You know, why are you bringing that up? And my answer was that, you know, the whole Nazi thing is, they're established villains. They've been in movies. There was even there's even comedies, like The Producers.
Three Stooges.
Hogan's Heroes. You know, that was actually a comedy show on TV about, you know, being in a concentration camp. So the whole Nazi thing has been done, and they're established villains. Hellboy has Nazis in it.
Yeah.
So it's not anything pro-Nazi. It's just that they're established villains. And plus, they're from outer space, so that kind of cuts the edge off of it. Like, they're out to kill the entire human race. They're not against one, you know, particular race. They're out to kill everybody.
Well, yeah. One day I'm going to have to sit down and have this discussion, because I did a lot of research with the SWAT sticker. I'm not offended, because the research that I've done is that this actually is from, I believe, Switzerland, or it's from Sweden. Originally, it had to do with good faith, good fortune. Hitler didn't know what it was. He just took it, thought, hey, let me just alter it a little, and I'll just call it, you know, what it is now, and that's a shame. I have seen the symbol more than I've seen the Confederate flag right now. When I find out what the symbol actually meant, I find it funny that Hitler really, besides the fact he didn't know what it was and what it meant in history, how he was as a dictator, you know, with Russia and everything else, with his downfall, but that's another conversation for another time. The fact that you're making the Nazis just werewolves, and again, werewolves like vampires do not do anything for me, because it's kind of like, okay, are you undead? I don't really know. And furthermore, if you are a werewolf, it just means when the moon is full, you turn into a wolf. Now, again, wolves in REL life, if I understand this, are really more scavengers and not so much as pack hunters. And I've seen a lot of movies and documentaries about wolves. I've seen The Gray with Liam Neeson. They're not as savage as Hollywood makes them out to be, which is understandable. I guess if you're going to make a creature into a Nazi...
Well, in World War II, under Hitler's regime, they actually had a part of the service called Nazi werewolves. They were kind of like the Navy SEALs.
I think I heard about that, yeah.
Yeah, so that's an actual title. They were called Nazi werewolves. So they were like this elite fighting team, and... you know, that has a little bit to do with the origin. The outer space thing has to do with the Nazis were working on an experimental craft called the Bell. It was like a flying saucer. So that has some root of truth to the flying saucer thing. And I explain all of it in issue 4. The werewolves are really aliens from another planet. What Hitler had done is that he escaped after World War II. A scientist fled with his head, just cut his head off because he had committed suicide. And this scientist was a kind of an alchemist, and he hooked Hitler's body, head onto a gorilla's body, and they fled to another planet. And they invaded this planet, and they turned all the people on the planet, a portion of them, into werewolves. And then they come back to Earth to invade it. So the werewolves that you're seeing are aliens from another planet.
Well, it would explain why they're Nazi werewolves from outer space. I mean, that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, I explained it all in issue 4 about, you know, they're aliens from another planet is what they are.
Well, I have been to the Holocaust Museum. I've had family members that, as far as I know, I don't think all of them were decimated during the Holocaust. I know my grandfather got out. Both grandparents on my mother's and father's side, of course, got out. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. I don't know how many other family members were able to get out in enough time. I do know that the Nazis were notorious for experimentation. I'm not going to get into it on this podcast because it's very, very disturbing. This cover, of course, shows the type of experimentation. I mean, you laugh about it. No, I mean, taking people's heads off and putting it onto other... Yeah, they did this. Mainly because they were bored or they just hated the Jews that much or they were just able to get away with it. Or injecting needles in their eyes, as we see with issue 2. I've asked this before and I'll ask it again, though. With the covers, how much want to push the envelope with the cover? How much do you think you can get away with before people finally say, you know what, I get what you're trying to do, but I'm like, enough is enough?
No, issue 2 was a tribute to, like Wortham's Seduction of the Innocent. What was considered banned on a comic, like a needle in the eye? Like, if you look at the Overstreet Price Guide, there are actually sections of you see books or Harvey horror, and they'll say needle in the eye cover or headlight cover. Because if you notice the woman on the strap to the thing, you know, she's got the big boobs, and she's also strapped down. So there's a bondage, headlight, needle in the eye, decapitation cover. So that has nothing to do with disparaging comments about what happened in World War II. Is more of a tribute to those banned covers from the 50s. And, you know, like I said before, these are aliens from another planet that are coming against the whole United States. I mean, all the races of the Earth. So they're not singling out anybody in particular.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. I mean, I could show off when I was unemployed back in the 90s. I remember in 96, 97 on the Jerry Springer Show, there was an episode, Ku Klux Klan, where they were little people and they hated anybody who was over 4 feet tall. Like, they hated all races, but they also hated anybody over 4 feet tall, so they actually hated the original KKK. So I kind of found that to be interesting. This issue does deal with a lot of the experimentation, so I know we've been talking a lot. Kendra, any comments with this one?
Well, I mean, it's one of those where you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt as it is what it's meant to be. It's not meant to be anything taken seriously, but it does deal a lot with the lore of what happened back in the Nazi regime. I mean, there were a ton of things that were hinted at experimentation-wise on what they were doing, whether it was psychic experiments, supernatural experiments. I mean, this is just a really cool way to kind of see a lot of things being described at once. I mean, I love the concept of the werewolf. I don't think that anybody's actually done it right. I really don't, in a comic book series. I mean, Woe's touching on it a little bit, and they're doing it kind of decently, but this one was fun to look at. I mean, it was fun to watch these guys, and I mean, you see the... I don't know if it's meant to be that way, but you see the snide parts of the humor that are kind of cut in a couple pieces of the dialogue. So, I mean, overall, it was decent. I can see why it's the most popular of the three that we looked at.
Ed, what about you?
I agree with what Kendra said. I mean, I had fun reading the book. to me, it felt like a early 80s, like mid to early 80s, like action movie or something like that. I mean, your main protagonist is the kid, and all of a sudden all this shit goes down around him, like Red Dawn style, and, you know, he's got to fight his way through the werewolves and everything, and I mean, I love the overall design that you had for Hitler, too. That was really, really Mike Mignola inspired right there. I was loving it. I was like, oh, man, there's a Hellboy fan in the house. What's up? So I was just loving it. And I mean, to be able to see the character designs at the end of the book, too.
That was cool.
I was enjoying that. I wanted to, like, print them off and, like, ink them.
I have to say, again, yes, I'm Jewish, and yet it didn't offend me or bother me. You know what it is? It kind of reminds me, one last time of the trailing off with the movie Contact, where the aliens, because technology was different, where they were just getting in contact with Earth, and they were just finding out what Earth was like 30, 40 years ago. I mean, this movie is supposed to take place in 1997. They're just finding out where the Nazis were, and they don't understand what happened in Germany. They don't understand what the Nazis were doing. They're still trying to figure out how to decipher Earth's culture. So I like that. The fact that they're putting on the SWAT sticker and they're following orders and everything, you're right. They're not really talking German. One has nothing to do with the other. I guess the idea is that when it comes to Nazis, we can kill them because we don't like them, because they're just evil incarnate, so if we kill a Nazi, it's okay.
Yeah, you know, like I said, they're established villains.
They're pretty much, I guess, like the Goombas in Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah,
yeah. Hey, don't bring out the Goombas.
That's the way that I see it. So,
I'm looking at it, they're like the greatest comic book cannon fodder ever.
Yeah, I mean,
nobody likes them.
No, no.
You know, they're going to cheer when the good guy kills them. And there's tons of them. So, I mean, that's like the perfect, you know, fodder for your book. I mean, your perfect villain, your perfect fodder all wrapped up in one, so.
Right, I mean, you don't have to have an established reason to not like them. I mean, it's already something coming into it that if you know anything about history, obviously you're going to know who the bad guy is. You don't have to set anything up. You don't have to spend 4 or 5 pages coming up with a backstory for these guys as to why we don't like them or what they did to make us not like them. It's just it's an immediate reaction to, I know who the villain is and who the hero is.
Because it's ironic because, you know, the Nazis did that experimentation, but Hitler gets experimented on.
Yeah, it's well, then again, there's always been rumors about Hitler being a closet homosexual. That the reason why he wanted to kill off homosexuals was because he didn't want to admit what he was and didn't understand it, so he figured this is the best way to hide it. Like most closet homosexuals, I'll just be in a bunch of denial, is what I've always... There's so many things about his mythology and about the history,
but in the comic book he gets experimented on, so
yeah.
You know, in the book, you know, these people are getting experimented on, but he was experimented on. That's how he comes up with the gorilla body.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to beat a dead horse. I have to say, with all your work, Simon, it is brilliant. The covers remind me of anything William Gaines, Mars Attacks. They're brilliant. I mean, I know they're Dean's work, but your writing as well also feels like something out of 70s and 80s comics, which is what I appreciate. You know, in a world right now where we just get more and more DC and Marvel getting shoved down our throat, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. The only thing that's bothered me has been the reboots with New 52 and Marvel Now, and now whatever Marvel is going to be doing next, and DCU. It's refreshing that there are other publishers out there that are putting more effort and not worried so much about rebooting and marketing and what's going to be made into a major motion picture. This is a nice love letter to all those 70s movies that I used to find on UHF or watch on MST3K.
Right, yeah.
Coming to expand on that, it's kind of nice not to see the cookie cutter artist thing happening either. I mean, there's very good differences that you can just tell. I mean, he's distinguished himself. And it's not, oh, well, you know, yes, there are different adaptations of it, but you usually use the same line work, and, you know, people are wanting to see the same thing, and it's nothing like that at all. I mean, you have a grossly different story, amazing artwork, and amazing color style. So, I mean, it's something that's very, very different from anything else that's on the market right now.
I knew when I started out that I wouldn't be able to do a superhero title, because I just feel like there's so many out there, and you've already got established superheroes, and I wanted this to be something really, really different. Like if you were walking through a comic book shop and you saw King Tut, Truck Driver Pharaoh, or Nazi werewolves from outer space, Kung Fu Satanists, would you stop and go, what the hell is that?
Yeah. I would.
The covers themselves all remind me of like the classics illustrated. That's the feel that I got when I looked at these things, and I was like, for that fact alone, I'm going to read this, because this is a nod to me growing up. You know, I used to have all these books, the classics illustrated, and the, you know, famous monsters of Filmland, and all that jazz. And
I love all that. I'm in my 50s, so I'm in the 70s.
Well, I'm pushing 40, so I'm right there with you. I know what you mean by the older stuff, and as a fan, I've been reading comic books since I could read. That's one of the things that drew me into these, is because the covers alone, like I said, they were like there to grab my attention. They were a nod to everything that I've read in the past, but they were something fresh and new, and something that made me giggle on top of it.
There's a campy factor to all the books, but there's also an element of horror where you'll be reading it and go, wow, I can't believe that happened. Or, you know, this is really wicked, you know, for a comic. I thought this was supposed to be funny, and, you know, something evil happened. So I want all those elements in there. Kind of like, you know, the Evil Dead series where, you know, you'll see something that, okay, is this funny? And then something horrible will happen. So, you know, I like that juxtaposition there.
Well, Simon, again, thank you so much for joining us. I hopefully like to see a motion comic or something with King Tut. There's just something about it that reminds me of those 70s TV shows I used to watch on syndication that I miss so much. You know, I would almost love to see this on Yahoo TV or Netflix if it's not picked up on a major network. The Nazi werewolves would also work, I guess, somewhere in a direct-to-DVD or an independent movie. I mean, there are a lot of comic book artists that somehow have gotten their work made into independent work.
Or maybe Nazi werewolves from outer space get caught in the Sharknado.
Yeah. I would like to... Are there any chance...
I would be third half on that.
You like that, Kendra?
I did. I love Sharknado. So you bringing that in, it was like,
I
yes.
I love that. It's a guilty pleasure. I mean, I'll admit, I watched it. I watched all three of them. You know, I ain't gonna lie.
What about a crossover with the characters? We ever see King Tut meet the Nazi werewolves, or?
I like them to all be in their own universe. I just don't think it would work out, you know, because you'd have to explain how does King Tut get into the Nazi werewolves universe, or how did Kung Fu Satanists merge with them? So, I'm not that clever.
So, where could the good people find you on social media right now?
Simon Sanchez, I'm on Facebook, and if you want to buy the books, they're at Indie Planet. Just type it in the internet, and they'll come up. And as soon as you go to the Indie Planet site, just type in the title, and all three titles are there. And you can even get them as a digital download for 99 cents.
Kendra, got anything new to plug?
I do, actually. I thought about this all day, so be proud of me, because I actually, like, organized myself for once. The new cover for Happy Thursday Comics is up for Interlution, with Simple Fun, Matt DeBolon, inked by myself. And then, also speaking of Indie Planet, we recently got our comics from Wonder Funders. And I have two stories in Anthology 1 and a story in Anthology 2 of my inked on it. And both of those are available for the hardcover. Print cover, they're $2.99, and then again for digital download, $0.99. So those are going to be played.
Well, Ed, I know a birthday is coming up soon.
Yep, Tuesday.
Yep. So we have a lot to discuss with you.
Happy birthday.
Yeah.
You're going to be a whopping 39 years old.
For me right now with HanaGaoCast, this week, actually in a couple weeks actually, we're going to be talking with Athena Finger, the granddaughter of Bill Finger. So I'm actually stoked on this one. But again, Simon, thank you so much, good sir, and we will talk to you all next time.
Say, kids, what would you like to do tonight?
Listen to the HP Lovecraft Literary Podcast!
Huh?
Every week, these two really smart and funny guys give a synopsis of a Lovecraft story, then talk about background critical reviews and what the stories say about the author.
How do we get these two boys into our home?
HPPodcast.com.
The internet? I don't know.
It's wholesome family entertainment. We can even see it on iTunes.
challenge is easy. And then we can impress our school friends with all our arcane knowledge.
Say, you know what I like to do on a night like this? With the dark woods out back silhouetted by the ghostly full moon, the branches' shadows making all sorts of crazy angled patterns in the yard?
You two aren't going to do that again, are you?
Why don't you two go out back and play with the shadows?
Take the baby with you.
Hey, there's already somebody out there.
What?
I think they're coming to talk to us.
The show listens. Yeah. Hey, we still can.
HBpodcast.com. Trash Video is your one-stop video shop in Sleazoid City.
Who the fuck is that dickhead?
I don't know.
We have the best rental stock of horror, cult, B-grade movies available on VHS.
Movies with corpse rape? Oh, let me get set.
Blu-ray? Fuck that shit! VHS!
Faces of Death is a family film.
Our professional, friendly, and knowledgeable staff are here to help you.
Hey, Roxy, after the shift, you wanna go watch a porno with me?
Shut up, Seth, I'm doing my nails.
So stop on by the store today!
I smell like videotapes in here.
TrashVideoPodcast.com.
Say, Jarvis, is it that time?
The house party protocol, sir?
Correct.
The Pull Bag is GCRN's comic book review and discussion-based podcast. Join me, your host, TFG and Mike, and the rest of the GCRN crew as we make our way through the comics we are reading. Inside the Pull Bag, you'll also find back-issue classics and origins episodes of how we got into comic reading. You can find the Pull Bag every Wednesday on iTunes and on www.geekcastradio.com. Make your great escape into comics and jump into the Pull Bag today.
Jarvis. Hey.
All wrapped up here, sir. Will there be anything else?
Ooh. Just watching something on Fantastic Four. I thought I was the only one who didn't like the movie.
Oh, yeah. You went and saw it, huh? How was it?
Shit.
But was the Roger Corman version better?
The Tim Story version was better. I think any version was better.
Wow.
Yeah, it was boring and bland.
What was so bad about it?
What was so bad about Fantastic Four? Ask the director, he'll tell you.
Everything.
Yes, everything. Right, Ed.
No, I'm going to watch it just so I can talk shit about it.
Oh.
I called it from the minute that it was, like, announced that it was going to flop hard as nuts.
You know what I love about it, though? Here's my favorite part about all this. Is that there was an 8-year-old kid that was about 5 rows behind me with his father. I would say with previews, it was about an hour and 8 minutes before they got their powers. Kid screams, "Finally!" And everybody was laughing because they were right. And then, at the end, he gets upset because there wasn't a tease, and the father said the same thing. The only thing that we got was 15,000 jobs were created because of this movie. I don't know how, but that was pretty much it.
Yeah, but a lot of them are going to the unemployment line now, so...
Yeah, it really was.
Here's my favorite part about this. Okay, Fantastic Four got a 9% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I thought 10.
9.
Oh, really?
Batman and Robin got 11%. That means Batman and Robin is a better film.
And we're going to be discussing that. Yeah, and we're going to be discussing that one, too. All right, I want to make sure the recorder is up. Good. Kendra, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Going through Fantastic Four withdrawals.
Withdrawals or just, like, you know...
Trauma.
Yeah.
Oh, you're discussing trauma comics, right?
Yeah, see, that's going to be the trauma relief.
We just found out today Xfinity is getting ready to release the brand new Fantastic Four movie on demand.
Really?
Yeah, literally, I think it goes up next week.
Yay!
The
you
new one?
For $15.99 outright.
In 2 weeks, will it be straight to DVD?
Probably.
Yeah.
Wait, you could buy it?
Honestly, I predict that this will be out of theaters by the end of the month.
Wait a second. You could buy it for $50.99?
$15.99.
Oh, I saw they said, for a minute. Well, you know what? It would be $50.99 because they have to make money somehow since it's bombed at the box office. I mean, $15.99.
From what I read, it did $11 million so far opening weekend.
Yeah, well, that was for the opening Friday.
Yeah. I thought it was 7.4.
$23 million total for the entire weekend, where, like, Mission Impossible did, like, $50 or $60 million for, like, its second weekend.
Yeah, I gotta ask this, though. Now, will the House of Mouse buy it or not? Or they're just gonna say, you know what, screw you?
Well, I think that something with contractual obligations and what have you, they can't do anything yet. They have to wait again until the license comes up for renewal. And if that comes about the way we want it to, then Marvel will get back a whole license and put out a real Fantastic Four movie.
Well, they kind of did. It's called The Incredibles, but I guess we'll get there when we get there.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that, especially since we're getting the sequel. And yep. Brad Bird is coming back, and I'm now okay with everything. And you know what? You're okay with Tomorrowland with me, Mr. Bird. I also love the fact, though, when I saw this movie, Fantastic Four, that they showed a preview of Star Wars, even though it's no longer a 20th Century Fox property. So I guess it's kind of like the gigantic finger, because it could have gone back to 20th Century Fox. Just saying.
The really good thing is this puts the kibosh on the rumored X-Men Fantastic Four crossover movie.
Yeah. That,
and I'm very happy about that.
I think we all are. I gotta ask you something, though, Simon. With the Trauma Comics, was that based on those Trauma movies? Like, is that how you got the name for it?
No, not at all. No connection. That's Trauma.
Right.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no connection whatsoever. In fact, I have a trademark on Trauma Comics.
Ooh. King Truck, with King Tut truck driving Pharaoh. Ooh. I'm sure we all know the mythology and, of course, mythology. Myth. Myth! Yeah, okay. Ooh. Cross what? You can't cross running water. I do love the dialogue, and I just want to jump to the end where after King Tut has destroyed the vampires, he's now not BJ and the Bear. What was that other one? Renegade. Was that it? Gender.
No. That's his wife.
Oh, that's his wife?
If you get bit by the vampire,
you
reverse your sex.
Oh, so that is the wife.
Yeah, that's the wife. Yeah, that's the shock ending.
Oh, I see. Okay, so the wife is now... Okay, that's... You kept saying the twist ending. I was trying to look at it, but I did get confused, and I'm like, is that his wife now?
Yeah. See, if you get bit by a transgender vampire, you turn into a vampire, and your sex changes.
Okay, so...
Ooh. You know, out of the ordinary.
I believe.
I want to believe.
Blasphemy.
Well, wait until we get to the Turkish version of Exorcist, Satan. But
we're not doing the Turkish version. We're going to do the original. We're going to do the Exorcist.
You want
to
do 2 and 3?
I'm fine with that.
Why?
Yeah.
Edward's not, but I'm fine with that.
Not at all.
Really?
No.
Well, there is research. I mean, there is a chicken that gets sacrificed, and yet I feel that the way the chicken gets sacrificed, it would make a little bit more sense in this comic than if I saw it in a 1950s voodoo movie where it's just done for shock value.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know. I just...
I think you're reading too much into it.
No, I mean, it's cool that you think that I put a lot of effort into it or research, but I really didn't.
I did a lot of research with the SWAT sticker, and what's interesting is that, well, I'm not going to pronounce it the correct way, but I'm Jewish. I mean, come on. I've seen this bandana in pawn shops. I actually went to a pawn shop a couple years ago, and I saw it in the case, and I walked over to the owner, and I said, listen, you know, I joked to him, of course. I said, listen, you know, I'm Jewish. I see that thing is $100. Could you give me, like, a forgiveness discount? You know, something like that. You know?
I've apparently got the rights to Batman. So I'm going to be rebooting the Batman series from square one.
Oh, you lucky bastard.
I'm going to be writing, drawing, inking, coloring, lettering the entire book myself, so it'll never come out.
It's a lot of work.
And I'm, like, I, I'm running for president, too, just so you know.
Okay, just remember not to call women pigs like Donald Trump did.
No, I'm running for the PS4 for every home.
We could have had a comic book supervillain as a president, kids, just saying.
Yeah, he's called Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Technical difficulties. Let's move on, shall we?